This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind their poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 31, where I talk with Sunflower Girl about her poem, Forget Me Please. Also, Yellow Sweater and I are hosting another Oh Snap YWP online open mic on February 27th at 1 p.m. EST. You can go to the front page of YWP to sign up and join us for a fun night of sharing poetry and listening to other YWP writers share their poetry. I hope you'll join us, and I hope you enjoy this episode.
I'm Willa Pelshon. My username on Young Writers Project is Sunflower, and the title of my poem is Forget Me Please. When I leave, forget me please. I'd much rather be forgotten than have my name said with a frown. Put a few flowers by my grave and walk away, please. Tears are just too sad. I hope you dance and jump and sing, because my life was good enough and you'll have all of yours ahead of you. If you have to think of me, at least do it with a laugh at the strange old life of you and I. Make sure there's cookies and lemonade at my silly old funeral. I know you'll have the strange urge to laugh. I hope you do, and everyone looks at you and laughs as well. Life is entirely too empty of strange laughs.
Yay, thank you so much. So what was your inspiration for this?
I can't actually remember the exact day that I wrote this, but I do remember that it was raining. And it was just, the whole world felt so sort of sad and gloomy. And I was sort of imagining like, oh, I wish I could just run away to Florida or the Caribbean or somewhere warm. And so I started out the poem with sort of the idea of just like running away and never coming back. And I guess slowly it turned into more of a like, when I die, I want everyone to be happy. But yeah, I was feeling the sort of gloom. And I think that's sort of what gave me the idea for it.
Mm-hmm. So what was the first line that you thought of, and how did you go from there?
Because I had that whole idea of just disappearing, I didn't like the idea of disappearing. I liked leaving, because I think that sounds a little bit more ominous, and you know, you don't entirely know what leaving is. It's not just disappearing. So I was like, oh, when I leave, not when I disappear, but when I leave. Like leaving, you don't know if that's permanent or not. I guess I liked that.
Very interesting. That reminds me of, whenever I hear the word disappear, I automatically think about the time when Agatha Christie disappeared. I don't know if you've heard the story or not. The librarian at the library I used to go to told me about it, and I was like, that's the craziest thing, but she went missing for like a week, and she staged her own disappearance, like something from one of her books. And that's a very, very interesting story. She ended up being found at some hotel. The hotel room was registered under her husband's like other lady's name, which is very interesting.
Yeah, I love that story so much. I guess probably deep in the back of my mind, some of this poem was inspired by that, because I just love stories of people disappearing and just leaving and not telling anyone where they're going. It's so interesting.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting too. There's a lot to write about there. Mm-hmm. So what line or phrase felt like the turning point, or like you had finally captured what you had been imagining?
Probably, I mean, the last line, life is entirely too empty of strange laughs, although that isn't entirely related to the whole idea of disappearing. I think it sort of captures the like gloom and sort of confusion of life, I guess. And I think once I got to that line, I was like, all right, I'm done. This is like the closing.
Yeah, I sometimes feel like that too when I'm writing poems, that like, okay, this is how it has to end. Or sometimes the ending isn't as straightforward and I have to work on it a little bit. Do you find that you generally write endings pretty easily, or do you spend a lot of time figuring out how a poem should end?
I think it depends on the poem. There are some times when I just immediately come up with an idea for a poem. I feel like I end up focusing more on the beginning and the sort of middle, I guess. And it's harder for me to end a poem, but when I'm just sort of writing and it's not like I have a sudden spark of an idea, I think it's easier for me to end a poem because I don't have this like specific idea that I'm going for that I feel like the poem has to represent. So I think it definitely depends.
There are so many lines in here that stick out to me. I'd much rather be forgotten than have my name said with a frown. Put a few flowers by my grave and walk away, please. Tears are just too sad. What was your inspiration for this?
So my grandfather, he died last year. And I just remember he didn't get to have a funeral and we didn't get to have a memorial service because right when we would have done that is when COVID got pretty big. And I don't know, I guess that sort of inspired me to write these lines because I was just imagining a funeral and I guess specifically imagining my funeral. I wouldn't want people to be crying. I wouldn't want, you know, people to stand around my grave and be so sad because, you know, I don't think life is all that bad. At least I got to experience some of it. Even if I were to die right now, I would be grateful for all the things that I got to experience.
I think that's a really good outlook to have on it and to just be grateful for what you did have versus be upset that you couldn't have a lot more.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's definitely why I wrote that line. I would rather people come to my grave or funeral and dance around and be happy because, you know, life is a pretty crazy thing. There's a whole statistic of like 1 in a million or something like that is how likely it is that you'll be born. So it's pretty crazy that we're even alive at all.
Mm-hmm. And some more lines. My life was good enough and you'll have all of yours ahead of you. If you have to think of me, at least do it with a laugh. And in a way, this reminds me of a Dr. Seuss book, sort of a darker version of it, where like it's a serious topic, but it's being addressed in sort of a lighthearted way.
Yeah, I get this feeling on rainy days. I just sort of, it's like this melancholy, but with a sort of Dr. Seuss vibe, I guess. I was feeling very excited for life, but also so put out by a lot of things that I guess, yeah, that's where that came from.
Yeah, I get that melancholy vibe. Do you think that the weather kind of changes your writing style and your voice in your writing?
Oh my gosh, so much. I absolutely love the rain. It's like my favorite type of weather, thunderstorms specifically. But I think even though I definitely end up writing much sadder poems when it's raining, I think I enjoy it more. But definitely there are days during the summer when it's super bright and sunny outside that I just feel so like optimistic about life that I'll write much more like excited, happy poems. I'm not really sure. Gloomy days, like just cloudy days, I guess, I tend to not write at all. I've actually never thought about this, but I think definitely like the extremes of weather are when I write.
That's interesting. I'm not really sure how that applies to me. I think that I kind of just write whenever, but usually I write at night and that definitely influences how I write, like if it's dark out versus if it's like in the morning, because at night sometimes like I have a lot of time to think about my day and if it was good or bad, and then that influences my writing too. So there are a bunch of different factors I think that go into it versus just the emotion I'm feeling.
Yeah, totally same. I think this summer, yeah, it must have been the summer, I pulled an all-nighter and I wrote so many poems, like, just in the depths of night, like 3 a.m. And I think I was sort of surprised about how inspired I felt so late at night. You know, I was expecting to be like, oh my God, I just want to go to bed. But somehow that really motivated me.
That's so cool. I've never pulled an all-nighter, but I've seen a bunch of videos on YouTube of people pulling all-nighters. And I'm like, I just don't know. I think I'd fall asleep by, like, 2. There's no way I could make it past 2.
Yeah, I saw so many videos on YouTube. That's definitely what inspired me. And honestly, I was sort of surprised. I was probably starting to get sleepy around like 1 a.m. But once I made it to like 2:30, I was like, oh my God, I have so much energy. Like I almost did like a full-on workout video, but then I was like, that might be a bad idea.
How did you stay awake? Did you like drink energy drinks or just like pure high on life?
I made myself a huge pot of sweet tea. I think the sugar and the caffeine from the tea somehow kept me awake, but it was an experience.
That sounds really cool. I don't really stay up that late unless I'm reading, but the latest I stayed up was like 3 maybe, and that was only because we had just gotten back from a flight, and it took us like hours to drive home. So that was the only reason why I was up. It was like not because I wanted to be. But also, my friend and I were talking about this the other day because I saw this YouTube video. Every single thing I talk about right now is about YouTube videos. But anyway, this girl was getting up at 3 a.m. every morning for a week. And we were saying how we could never imagine getting up that early because, like, just it'd feel like the middle of the night. Like, we didn't get any sleep.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like just this past year, probably during COVID, I've started going to bed, like, way later. I think just because I've had the ability to do online school. I mean, like, even in eighth grade, I wasn't the type of person to stay up late. I was just like, all right, I go to bed at 9, just like, that's how it is every day. And now, like, I've been staying up till like midnight some nights, which honestly probably isn't the best thing. Like, I'm trying to stop doing that. But I don't know. I feel like I'm discovering my, like, inner night owl.
I know. I've always said I'm a night owl. I have the hardest time waking up in the morning, but I can easily stay up till midnight. And sometimes I'm not even tired at midnight and I'll just start doing like random things. But I used to not be able to stay up past 10 and I just like pass out at like 9 o'clock too. But then I think I just started waking up later. And so then I'd fall asleep later and it like changed my sleep schedule. But I've been on winter break for about almost a month now. And so I've been waking up at like noon every day and that hasn't helped me at all because then it's like midnight and I'm like not tired at all. So I have to try to get my sleep schedule back to normal.
Right. I feel like that's such a teenager thing, like waking up later and later. Honestly, I think I do the same thing, but past like 9, I can't really stay asleep. You know, I'll do the thing where I like wake up and then like roll over and go back to sleep every 15 minutes or something. But I don't know. I've probably slept until like 1 p.m. I can wake up early when I'm about to like go to the airport. I think that's the one time that I can wake up early and like be really excited about it. There's something about like waking up at 4 a.m. and like getting in the car and driving to the airport that's so fun.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, I can only get up early when like I know I have to be somewhere or I know I'm doing something exciting.
Yeah, exactly.
But the rest of the time, I'm just like completely out until noon and that's that. Like no one's gonna wake me up. And once I actually slept for like 14 hours straight and I went downstairs to see my family. It was like noon and they're like, where have you been? And I was like, I just slept for 14 hours. But it felt so good. It was like a total reset.
I don't think I've ever slept that long. I wish I could sleep that long. That sounds pretty great. That definitely, yeah, that sounds like such a, like, oh, you just wake up so refreshed.
So, moving on, make sure there's cookies and lemonade at my silly old funeral. And in my mind, I instantly saw, like, a Charlie Brown scene, like, but, like, a dark version. Charlie Brown is telling his friends, like, I'm going to have a funeral, and this is what you have to do, bring your cookies and your lemonade. It's really interesting how you have, like, this serious topic, like, and like I said before, but, like, in a lighthearted way, and, like, sort of with a little bit of like a childhood vibe.
Yeah, that's like basically exactly what I was going for. When I wrote down cookies and lemonade, those were just like the first two things that came to my mind. But I think I definitely, that came from a sort of like childish view. Like I think I wrote the entire poem in a sort of like I'm not entirely sure. I guess it was just a sort of like happy but you know, still melancholy. Like I wanted it to be a little bit like giddy almost. And so cookies and lemonade, like that's like the total like 6-year-old like snack time, you know? And I guess I also, that for some reason reminds me of like the South in the 60s, which is also sort of like the vibe that I was going for. And yeah, I guess that just made sense in my brain because like those were the two first things that I thought of.
Yeah, it's funny because I had the same connection too, like being younger and like sitting at, you know, those little like child-sized tables and chairs with your friends and like they're wooden or something. And then you'd have like a little Dixie cup of like lemonade, a little plate of cookies.
Yes,
and I
exactly.
was like, oh, that's so cute. And then I was like, oh, but also I remember like going to relatives' funerals and like seeing cookies and lemonade there. So it's interesting to see like the same two objects but in completely different scenarios.
Yeah.
And I get the like giddy vibe. I was getting that too, like melancholy but giddy and a little bit hysteric but not too much.
I sort of got like a crazy vibe when I read it through. After I had written that, I was like, oh wow, this sounds a little bit insane. But yeah, I think all in all, I got the vibe that I was going for.
Mm-hmm. That's great. And your ending. I know you'll have that strange urge to laugh. I hope you do. And everyone looks at you and laughs as well. Life is entirely too empty of strange laughs. And we talked about that last little bit, but what was your inspiration for this ending?
You know, going with the whole thinking of funerals things, I was like, every single funeral that I've gone to, which to be fair, hasn't been that many, probably like 2 or 3, but every single time I've sat there and wanted to laugh, and I've been like, oh, that's so horrible. Like, I should not be laughing. There's no reason to laugh. Someone has died. And I think I've talked to friends about this, and everybody gets this. You know, you have this urge to laugh in just worst possible times. And I guess I was just thinking, I hope people do laugh at my funeral. You know, I don't, like I said before, I don't want it to be some sad affair where everyone is all, you know, weeping over my death, you know. I guess I want everyone to be dressed up in bright colors and to be dancing around and be happy.
Yeah, I think that's really great. I definitely related to this line a lot because I wrote a poem about this. It's on my YW blog. It's called Motion. And I haven't read it in a while, but I just thought about it when I was reading your poem because it was like right after I left my grandma's funeral with my brother and we were talking about dino nuggets in the car. And I had this like strange urge to laugh and just start like laughing hysterically at it all. But then I knew it was like a really somber moment. So I felt really guilty for like wanting to laugh. But I mean, I think it's kind of important to still have laughter even in a serious moment because it's not like, it may seem insensitive to like what just happened, but I feel like it's also a way of getting through it.
Right. Honestly, it's the same thing with like when your parents are yelling at you or something like that. And just you want to laugh at them, but you're like, no, this will get me in even more trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should honor our emotions, you know, maybe not when your parents are yelling at you. I think laughing when we want to, because laughing is so good for you. And everyone else smiles when you hear someone else laugh. And I think it's just really great.
Yeah. And I think that the kind of magic of writing is that people can instantly be brought back to like one of their memories that has to do with a poem that they read. When I was reading your poem, I was instantly brought back to that memory and to that poem that I wrote. And then at the same time, if you read my poem, you could instantly be brought back to your poem and like your experience. So I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really fun when you can like read someone else's poem and be like, oh my God, that happened to me. Or something like that. It's really fun being able to, or like reading just old poems, like Emily Dickinson poems. I relate to those so much, which is so strange because, you know, she was in like the 1860s, 1870s, maybe. I just like feel such a connection to her poems. Maybe not necessarily because I have like specific memories that go along with them, but I guess the emotions that I get from them just like make so much sense to me. And it's really fun being able to connect poems like that.
Yeah, and this is interesting because I saw this question online, but we've always talked on the podcast about how emotion is so important when you're writing because it really connects you. But like, if someone didn't feel emotions, could they still be a writer?
Gosh, that's a really deep question. I feel like everyone can be a writer because the sort of difference, I guess, would, even if you're not feeling emotions as deeply, I feel like that doesn't make them any less like real. And so like, you know, a 6-year-old can have these like feelings that most other people wouldn't really consider them to be like real or like deep feelings. But there's plenty of like writing that feels real to a 6-year-old, if that makes any sense. So I feel like, I guess I would say the answer is like, yes, anyone could be a writer. But maybe less people would be able to appreciate their writing.
Yes, I agree with that completely, that anyone could be a writer, but people just may not see a lot in it and like be able to take a lot away from it. But circling back to what we were just talking about, because I just remembered this. We were talking about my poem that I was thinking about when I was reading your poem. And my brother and I were talking about Dino Nuggets, and then it was just, it had that same like giddy vibe that you were talking about in your poem. Mm-hmm. And that like melancholy, but like very, very childlike in a way, because like Dino Nuggets, the whole image is like very much the same as cookies and lemonade.
Yeah.
You know, when you're with the kid with other little kids. And so it felt like this really interesting, to use a big word here, juxtaposition between like being a kid and having like a lot of innocence, and also like knowing that death and funerals are this very serious and important thing.
Yeah, I guess I like my inner child came out sort of when I was writing this, because I think we all have that sort of innocence left inside of us, but you know, so much of the like real world has sort of pushed that down and turned us into like people who, you know, we care about politics and stuff like that. And I guess I sort of just tried to ignore all of that while I was writing this poem. But, you know, I guess in the poem, you can still sort of feel it like looming over you.
Yeah, for sure. And that's the same way that I felt when I was writing mine, was that like this childlike thing still in the back of my head that's being like, why are you talking about Dino Nuggets? And like, why does it have so much symbolism to you? And like, sort of connecting my childhood with like my present and stuff. But it was interesting because, to talk about my poem for a second, the ending was, I wonder if there are Dino Nuggets in heaven. Because, you know, when you're a little kid and a family member dies, you're told that like, oh, they're in heaven now. But sometimes it's not really easy to understand, like, what is heaven? What is there? Like, can people eat food there? And, like, what happens, like, in the afterlife, essentially? So it was, like, me sort of wondering if this thing that I was kind of laughing about right now could be something that my grandma was laughing about, too, in heaven. So yeah. It was interesting. And the whole moral of me telling this is that your poem reminded me a lot of my poem, and I really connected to it.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think, I mean, I've never had Dino Nuggies, but I can, like, I don't know. I just, like, even hearing you describe your poem, like, it makes sense to me. And I can see how you, like, connect to the two.
Oh, thank you. Now, moving on to some less heavy topics, and I know this has been kind of serious. How did you first become interested in writing?
I've always been interested in reading, I will say that. So I think that's definitely had a, that's sort of connected me to writing, but I've never been really interested in it until probably sixth grade. Actually, in sixth grade, so there's this boy who I had a crush on in sixth grade, and he was a really great writer. Like, he, writing was totally his life. And so over that summer, I was just like, okay, I'm a writer. Like, I'm just going to try this. And like over that year, I realized like, this is really fun. I like this. And so I just completely moved on from that boy. And I was like, all right, writing is pretty cool. We can ignore him, but like, this is great.
Oh, I love that story.
I can't remember if it was seventh grade or eighth grade. I had a couple of friends who were on Young Writers Project, and I just was like, you know what, I'll go for it. Let's just like try this out. You know, it's pretty, it's not like a big, like, oh, I'm starting a blog to post writing. It's just a nice little like way to share poetry and stories. And although I haven't posted any stories, I do write a lot. I used to write a lot of stories. I don't write as many now. But yeah, I guess that's the short version. I sort of discovered writing and then just sort of completely committed to it. And it's been really fun.
That's great. I love that so much. I'm so glad that you could enjoy YWP. So it's interesting that you mentioned that you write stories too. What is that experience like, and how does it differ from when you write poems?
Oh, it's so different. I think I probably started writing stories. I didn't write poems until like eighth grade. And so a lot of my stories were basically just like me wishing I had a different life. So it was like girls who go on adventures, or girls who, you know, travel to faraway places. And I think that was, I used my stories as like a sort of escape. Whereas when I write poems, it's more of a just like letting my feelings out. So they're sort of opposite in that way. One of them is trying to like clamp down on my feelings and just ignore them, and the other is just like letting them all gush out. But yeah, they're definitely very different. Becoming more and more of a teenager, I've started to have more and more emotions, so I write more poems, I guess. But yeah, they're very different when I write them.
That's interesting. I used to be the same. Like, I would write a lot of stories and in the same way, like, things that I wanted to do but I knew I couldn't do because, like, I can't just get on a plane and travel to Paris or London right now, or, like, I couldn't just start my own bakery or my own bookshop or, like, et cetera, et cetera. And so I definitely wrote stories in the same way, but I haven't been writing a lot of stories lately, and I really want to get back into that because I feel like I had so much fun coming up with it. Yeah, and even though I always say that stories require so much like developing, I really do like being in another character's mind, and sometimes I do miss it, but once I have like the first page, that's when I start to lose my like interest in it. But like for the first page, everything's great and I really like it.
Yeah, that's I'm the exact same way. Just the other day though, I had an idea for a story, because I can come up with so many ideas for stories, but I never write them is the problem. And I came up with an idea for a story, and I was like, I'm just gonna like write out all my ideas and not actually write the story. And that ended up being really fun. I was just sort of like putting random details down, like typing it all out. And I ended up writing like 3 pages of like basically coming up with a story arc, but without any of the like actual writing. It was really fun.
That's cool. I like that a lot. So, what are your main sources of inspiration?
Gosh, I guess nature, because I have a lot of windows in my room. You know, I can like just glance from, because I normally sit on my bed when I write. I can just sort of like glance out the window. And sometimes I'll sit like actually on my window because I have like a little ledge. And it's really nice because I live in the mountains. I can just, you know, see the sunrise and the sunset and all the really pretty trees. And I live near the ponds, and sometimes like moose will just walk by our door, which is really cool. And I guess Emily Dickinson also, she was the first like poet that I got a book of and read. I got her like children's book of poems, which although I was in sixth grade at the time, like I could actually read like nicer books, but that I just, the drawings in that book really like called to me. So I guess Emily Dickinson and nature probably, and also just sort of everyday life and the like mundane things, I guess, because I don't as much write about like huge catastrophes and I guess stuff like that. I'm much more interested in like tiny details.
Yeah, I was actually just talking about this on a podcast, is that you don't always have to write about big catastrophes and big like terrible moments or big amazing moments. It can always just be something small, like a little thought that you had or a little thing that you noticed. So I think those poems are just as important as the big, big, important ones.
Yeah, I guess that's definitely why I have a pretty big appreciation for poetry. It's a really great way to just appreciate, like, everything, rather than, like, stories are much more appreciative of bigger moments, you know? They have to have, like, the good story arc, whereas poetry can just sort of be whatever you want it to be.
Exactly. And it's so cool how you mentioned that you see moose sometimes, because in my neighborhood we're sort of close to like a main road, but there's a bunch of like woods behind my neighborhood, so a lot of like natural area and wetlands and stuff, and we have deer come by sometimes, and they'll stand like in the middle of the road or like cross the street or something, can like just like maybe 2 feet away from someone's home. So it's so cool to see them like so close to us. And sometimes yeah, they'll just, like, stay there if people walk by, and, like, they won't even run away. So it's so cool how, like, we're able to connect to nature so easily, like, right in our backyards.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the reasons why I love living in Vermont so much. We have such a, like, small population that we haven't, you know, completely developed everything, and we still have, like, such big populations of all these animals. It's really, really fun.
Yeah, and it's so funny when my out-of-state friends come to Vermont, and I don't know if you've seen this, but, like, they're always, like, where are all the buildings? Where are the skyscrapers? Where are the billboards? I'm like, we don't have any of those. It's like trees and cows and like bunnies and water and that's it. Sometimes it feels like a completely different like world compared to like big cities.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I've had to, so my cousin, he lives in the UAE, and that's like a super, super developed place. Like there's barely any like green space. And I've had to explain to him multiple times that Vermont only has like 2 or 3 malls. And he's just so confused by that because he has like 5 malls in walking distance from his house.
Right.
Yeah, it's, I love how undeveloped Vermont is.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how it can definitely feel like almost like you're time traveling back to like before technology. And I know that sounds really weird, but like in a way, because like in some other state like Florida or Massachusetts or New York, there isn't really any area where you can feel like you're not like surrounded by stores and people and like big screens and your phone. And in Vermont, there are some places where you won't have a phone signal for hours. And like, you can be completely just with nature and like away from malls. It's funny how you're talking about malls because my friends from Florida came over a few years ago to visit me. And we took them to like the main mall, the University Mall. And they're like, this is it. And I was like, yeah, about 5 stores, 2 restaurants, that's it. And they were like, what? Where do you get stuff? And I was like, right here.
Yeah, I remember, I think from like 4th grade through 6th grade, me and my friends, we would go to the mall for our birthdays just because like that was the most cool independent thing that we could do. And our parents would let us just like walk around because it was such a small mall. But at the time we were like, oh, the mall, it's so big, so worldly, so many people. And now having visited like New York and, you know, other countries, I'm like, wow, our mall is absolutely tiny compared to so many other places.
Me too. I completely relate to that. My friend and I used to go there like every weekend and we think that we're so like such fashionistas and so like modern and so cool and just like walking around with our like bags of clothes and stuff from like Claire's, which wasn't even that fancy. But then I went to Times Square in New York City and I was just like blown away. I was like, this is a place in the world? I like, this is so different from Vermont. It's like such a alternate dimension compared to like what I was used to. So I definitely had like a big shock going to the city from thinking that like Vermont was pretty big already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like Vermont, if you grow up in Vermont, it's sort of like a bubble. You grow up in this like, oh yeah, the University Mall is big, and like our like main city Burlington is like pretty big, but like compared to everything else, like there's city blocks that are like bigger than Burlington. It's crazy.
I know. I think it's really interesting too because sometimes I'm just like so amazed that I feel like this is a lot of kids who live like in the Cabot area have told me that some of their friends have never been to Burlington and like they've never experienced that. And I was like, that's so crazy that like you've never been to Burlington because I feel like it's not that intimidating or scary, but I guess that's coming from someone who's been there a lot.
Yeah, that's sort of hard to imagine. Like I live 30 minutes from Burlington and so like we'll go there to like go out to eat or something or watch a movie. I can't imagine like not even going to Burlington. Like that one, you must live in a really, really small place to not go to Burlington.
But it's interesting how like the places that we grew up definitely influence how we see the world. But moving on to some other questions, what books have shaped you as a writer and a human being?
Oh man. Definitely Harry Potter. That's probably a really cliche answer because everybody's read Harry Potter, but my mom read Harry Potter to me when I was like 5 and 6, and then I reread it when I was in 5th or 6th grade, I think. And those books, they just inspire me every single time I read them. Like sometimes I'll just like randomly sit down and read a chapter of one of them just because they're like so well written and they're just so, like, you get immersed so much in the world. I just love them. And I think Sharon Creech, I think she's a Vermont writer. I could be wrong, but I really love her books. Specifically, the book Bloomability. I read that when I was in sixth grade too, I think. That was such an inspiring book. It's about a girl who goes to live in Italy at an international boarding school. And she's surrounded by all these like rich kids whose ambassador parents sent them there. But she's there because her uncle is like the headmaster. And it's just such an interesting book because it doesn't really have a story arc. There's no like big climax. It's more just her living there and trying to like understand all these people who are so different from her. And I really loved that book.
That's really cool. I love those stories like of kids going to boarding schools when I was younger, and I always like fantasized me going to a boarding school. Yes, exactly. And stuff in like Italy or France, because that was so like realistic to me when I was in like middle school. But I love those stories that you can like connect to.
Yeah, so many times I've looked up all the like fancy boarding schools in specifically like Switzerland, but the places that like the richest people in the world send their kids, I've looked at them and been like, I could figure out how to get in there. Like, we could figure out how to afford it. Or like,
that's not too difficult. That's like doable.
Then when I like get down from that high pedestal, I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. So when did you feel like you could first call yourself a writer?
Oh man, honestly, I still don't really feel like I can call myself a writer. But like, I guess on the other side of that, I feel like everybody can call themselves a writer. Like if you've written a word, I feel like you can call yourself a writer. So I don't know. I guess I'm not a huge fan of titles. So I would just say I feel like I am and I'm also not.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same way a little bit, but I think that I first started feeling like a real in quotations writer when I was first published, because I feel like that definitely made a difference in how I saw my writing, and I was like, oh, people like it. Okay, thank you. So, oh my
God. The first time that I got published, I was like, oh my God, I'm so cool. I feel so special. And yeah, I guess that definitely was sort of like a stepping stone. Like that made me feel a little bit more like, okay, like people like might actually like this. That's pretty cool. But yeah, I guess I don't think I would ever call myself like a writer unless I got something published, like published, you know, like a book or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like it's always kind of a little bit pretentious to say, like, I'm a writer. Like, I'm from New York City and yeah, stuff. Exactly. It always brings to mind this, like, very specific image of someone who's just, like, very annoying. But I think it's important to give yourself credit that, like, if you write poems, then you're a writer. And if you enjoy what you write, then you're a writer. And, I mean, you don't have to label yourself in a way that you don't like, but, I mean, you're a writer. So how did you discover YWP and what role does it play in your life?
Probably in like fifth grade. I think I noticed it in the back of the paper because we would get the paper delivered to our mailbox. And I would go up and get the mail and like, you know, scan through the paper as I was walking back to the house. And I sort of like realized like, oh, whoa, there's all these like teenagers like getting writing published in the paper. That's so cool. And then I learned that a couple of my friends' older siblings and a couple of my friends were part of it. And even though they weren't getting published, like they were like posting poems. And so during sixth grade, I started like checking out the website and like looking at it and being like, oh my gosh, there's so many people on here. That's so cool. And I think in the seventh or eighth grade, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to put up a poem and see what happens. And I definitely posted a couple poems and then just like forgot about it and came back and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna like look at it and there's gonna be tons of like likes and everyone's gonna be super excited. And I had like no likes and I was like, that's a little bit disappointing, but that's okay. And then I think I forgot about it again for a while. And then during quarantine, I was like, I have all this writing. I might as well start posting it again. And yeah, I guess then I started posting a little bit more continuously, and I have been until now, which has been pretty fun.
That's really great. I'm glad that you could rediscover YWP. I definitely had the same experience. My mom saw the writing section in the back of the paper. And so I started submitting to YWP, and it's been really great, and I love it so much. And all of my neighbors get the paper, so they all read my poems when they're published, which is sometimes cool to have, like, my piano teacher say, oh, I read your poem in the paper, and it's like, oh, that's so cool. But at the same time, it's like, I feel like it's also a very personal part of me, and it's kind of weird to be sharing it, like, in a way unwillingly, because I wouldn't ever be like, hi, piano teacher, want to read my poem? But I mean, it's still cool at the same time that I can share it with the world, I guess, or at least some part of Burlington.
Yeah, exactly. It's really fun when I'll, like, have a poem published and, you know, a random, like, a teacher or just a, like, random neighbor will be like, oh, Willa, I saw your poem. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, I, like, that's, that makes me slightly uncomfortable, but, like, also cool. And yeah, it's a really strange feeling, I feel like, when you first see your poem in the paper.
Yeah, and, like, seeing your work in print. I have a whole folder of, like, poems I've had in the paper, and it's so cool to flip back to, like, the first ones I had and be like, oh, that's so cute, I can't believe that I forgot I wrote that. And then to someone be like, oh, I wish I had forgotten about that one. It's cool to have that physical memory of it. So, some more questions, last two questions. What is the best writing advice you've ever gotten?
I don't think I've ever gotten, I've never had someone, like, come up and, like, specifically tell me this, but whenever I've talked to any, like, writing teacher, I've always just gotten, you know, they've always said something around the lines of, like, just write how you feel, just try and write. You don't have to try and make it sound perfect. You don't have to make every little thing that you write be, like, the perfect word. Like, just, like, put words on paper and see what happens. And yeah, I think that's really helpful, because I'll go, like, months without writing sometimes just because I never feel, like, the spark. And then one day I'll be like, all right, you just have to like, just do it, and, like, you'll get back into it. And so I think that helps me a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. And what writing advice would you give to someone else?
Honestly, the same thing. I would just say, just do it. Just try something. You know, you may not like the end product, but at least you tried. And, you know, there's so many different writing styles. There's so many different ways that you can choose to write that I feel like everybody can find something. So I think it's always just good to try.
I second that 100%, and to not feel like you have to copy someone else's style or be exactly like someone else. I mean, you can find your own voice and find your own style and, like, really appreciate it.
Yeah. My friend, Sam Aikman, her username on Young Writers Project is Love to Write. Mm-hmm. I read her poems first when I was probably in, like, 7th grade, and I was so inspired by, like, her writing style, and I tried to write poems like that, and every single one came out absolutely horrible. And I finally conceded to the fact that, like, this is not my writing style, and I was slowly able to find my own, but I still, like, have such an appreciation for her way of writing, because I think it's really beautiful and interesting.
I agree. I talked to her about her poem that's in the Anthology 11 for the Anthology 11 podcast episode, and her writing is just so amazing. And I feel like it's so cool how you can admire fellow YWP writers for their writing.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, my other friend, Zoe, I think you just interviewed
Yes, Zoe B.
She also has, like, a completely different writing style from me. And we actually started, like, posting stuff around the same time. And I think it's just really fun to, like, see how different our poems are, but how, like, similar people we are. And yeah, I just love that everybody has such a different way of expressing themselves.
I agree. It's interesting how people with very similar personalities write completely differently. People with completely different personalities write very similarly. So I'm glad that you're enjoying YWP, that you have a lot of friends here whose writing you can support and who support your writing. And with that being said, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I'm so glad that we get to talk today about your poem, tons of other cool writing things, all sorts of jazz stuff.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
This has been episode 31 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed and stay tuned for episode 32. Bye!